August 16th, 2021, Planning Board meeting at 7 o'clock.
Yes, we do. We also have a properly noticed public hearing starting at 7:01. Just confirm with the applicant, you put the sign up, correct?
Yep, yes, sir. Up and up. Yes, sir.
Is there a public hearing on the solar project?
That's next. That's the second item.
It's on the corner of Mount Road and Park 32. And he turned there's a 10-acre parcel there. He turned it into two 5-acre lots, lot one and lot two. And we're asking for the subdivision of these two lots.
The only outstanding item had on this was the renumbering of the plat. I think he's got it right now. It's one, lot one and two.
One and two?
Yep.
Or
public or private wastewater treatment utilities. The proposed actions impair the character and quality of important historic archaeological architectural or aesthetic resources. The proposed actions result in adverse change in natural resources. The proposed actions result in increase in the potential of erosion, flooding, or drainage problems. The proposed action create a hazard to environmental resources or human health. Part two. And that task for the environmental assessment. In the case of subdivision, you should determine the final limits. Do I have a motion? Motion has been made for the maintenance declaration in the case of subdivision, the environmental assessment form, in the case of subdivision. The motion, do I have a second?
I'll make a second.
Motion has been made and seconded. Any further discussion? If not, would you call the roll, please?
Mr. Arnold?
Yes.
Mr. Bergman?
Yes.
Ms. Perdue?
Yes.
Mr. Shaver?
Yes.
Ms. Mathias?
Yes.
Mr. Siebel?
Yes.
Mr. Jensen?
Aye. Do I have a 7 affirmative? Motion carried. Board, is there anything further you'd like to do? No? No, this isn't true. Okay. We now ask that you address us on the one bar for the people and schedule a public hearing for the case of subdivision. For our public hearings, there are two basic ground rules. First one being that if anyone has a comment or concern that they would like to voice concerning this application, they're encouraged and invited to do so. If you're so inclined, we'd like to have the names to go along with them, so that later on, anything has to occur, you can say, John Jones said, rather than someone said. That is up to you. And probably the most important ground rule for the whole thing is we will maintain some sense of decorum. On that, does anyone have any questions, comments, or concerns with the proposed case of subdivision?
I have a couple of questions. Name is Karen Wood. In addition to the questions that were on the questionnaire that you just went through, are there other regulations that you evaluate against agricultural impacts, given that New York State is trying to retain farming land, that now there's a subdivision, a residential subdivision, where a farm just existed? I didn't see anything in the criteria about an evaluation of the loss of farmland. Is there anything in your regulations or criteria for converting farmland to a residential subdivision that are considered?
There is a consideration in our regulations that anyone may do anything that is allowed with their property. We cannot tell you that you cannot do something that is allowed in our regulations. So if we have a parcel regardless of what it says and meets the criteria, it can be subdivided according to the current regulations.
The other thing I would point out is that nothing is to guarantee that this is going to be residentially developed.
No.
Ag continues to be an allowed use in that district, and ag can occur on the 5-lot subdivision just as easily as it can on the 10-lot.
So is 5 the minimum acreage for a subdivision?
Yes.
Depending on the zoning area that's in. You have different zone in the town. Each one has their own requirement. And ag district is 5. And you get the R1s, you maybe half. So it depends on the zone. You get a resource protection, and it's maybe 10. So it depends on the zone.
And was a erosion, drainage, evaluation, soil integrity of this, these two lots evaluated?
The master portion of this area underwent a subdivision review for, I think it's 4 lots, 5 lots, and everything was in part of that was consideration at that time. So we have a negative on the erosion potential.
So since it was done on the other subdivision of the full farm, then there's no need to do it for these two lots?
Well, it will be checked again at the time of building permit. If there is one issued, or applied for, I should say, it will be evaluated again at the time of building permit as well.
Is that anything that would come to the neighbor? And not so much with these two lots, but the other subdivision of this overall farm? It could create an erosion issue with my farmland. That's what I'm very much concerned about. I understand adding these, subdividing these two lots doesn't make sense to me as a farmer, but Keith, if you don't have a requirement that says thou shalt not subdivide, and I do appreciate that it is minimum of 5 acres, but going forward, I'm really concerned about some impact because somebody would have known that I'm getting erosion issues coming out of some of those other lots. And I don't know when that would ever be voiced. And I didn't realize all this, the major subdivision happened last year during COVID, and I was not aware of it. And as we discussed previously, I was never informed of that. It had the wrong name on the plat.
Well, there's several factors to consider. If we have disturbance over an acre, then it is subject to a stormwater pollution prevention plan preparation. If disturbance is under an acre, then it's subject to a soil erosion and sediment control plan, which is a lesser standard, but it is still reviewed. And that's what's done at the time of building permit application. And then the other factor to consider is there are exemptions in the state stormwater and erosion control measures for farming practices. So, you know, in terms of the encouragement of ag and not making the regulations overly burdensome, the ag use is largely exempt from, you know, the stormwater controls.
I appreciate that, but now we're taking what is ag land, we're making it now a subdivision, and I'm concerned.
Well, again, I would just emphasize to you that because it's subdivided does not instantly mean that it's going to, the ag use is going to be lost. You know, and even if a house is created on now a vacant 5 acre lot, there's a lot of farms in this community that are 5 acres, even 3 acres in size, and there's farming going on. Even if it is, you know, an individual's own hobby farm or something like that, there's a lot of farming that occurs in this community on 3, 4, 5 acres. So, about, not to say it couldn't either. I'm just saying there's a lot of things you can point to throughout our ag district of small-scale hobby farms that are very active.
So if it's any consolation to you, there's nothing in a subdivision plan that allows for dumping excess water runoff from their subdivision onto another property. In fact, our subdivision rules don't allow that. So it's up to you if they do start subdividing this further and you find that there's a runoff issue, by all means, you contact the planning department here at the town and they will make sure that's remedied. That is not allowed.
Okay, I wanted to
know. In fact, as Jim was trying to get across to you, I think in a very eloquent way, you're more likely to get runoff from the farmland than you are from the subdivision, as far as legally goes. And as a farmer, I can tell you that is a true thing. Okay. I have runoff from my fields that leaves my property that if it was a subdivision would not be allowed to leave the property. We'd have to treat it on site. Okay. So this sublot, it's a 2-lot subdivision of a 10-acre lot and a 2 5-acre lots that fit our zoning. Okay. My guess is it'll probably lead to houses being put on. I happen to not agree. I don't like the 5-acre zoning. I think it creates lots that are too big to mow and too small to farm. But unfortunately, that's one of the ways of trying to keep overdevelopment in the ag zone under control, is to require 5 acres with a lot. There's other ways to do it. Jim and I have discussed it before. I'd love to see written in the code. We haven't gotten there yet. That might make it easier to develop in the farm zone, but would protect farmland. If it's a major subdivision, if, say, the parcel to the east comes in front of us with an 8 or 10 or 12 lot subdivision, planned subdivision with a road and stormwater and everything else, then we do take a look at the ag qualities. Okay, but this is a 2-lot subdivision, and the 2 5-acre lots, not a housing lot or a field, just 2 5-acre lots.
I appreciate that. They just took a farm, divided it, and now they're further dividing it, and I was just wondering when that stops.
5 acres.
And it stops at 5 acres, and that's basically the one criteria that you can leverage on your decisions for subdivisions, is basically it can't be smaller than 5 acres.
It legally stops at 5 acres. I can tell you my personal experience in this town with the 5-acre zoning is it practically stops at the cost of utilities and roads. All right, so in our area, when somebody looks at a 65-acre parcel and they're going to subdivide it, and they have to make 5-acre lots and cover all the utilities and the roads and all the engineering ahead of time, it tends to really slow the development right down. Okay? So individual lots with road frontage, where they can throw a driveway right out on the road and hook up to a power line that's going by, that's not an impediment. But when they have to start running roads and utilities in, then it gets kind of expensive.
And just one other item I would point out just for your consideration is that there's also other interests trying to be met by the regulation. And that is the idea that exchange of property among family members in this community is not necessarily encouraged, but we're trying to regulate things in such a way that it's not burdensome. So, the subdivision that you see here is really there's a sale of some of these lots among family members, and again that's just, I'm not saying it's a be all and end all, but it is a objective that is considered in the regulation. Let's put it that way.
I understand that for this lot to be 10 acres, not this lot to be 2 5s.
I'm just talking about the level of regulation that is imposed, the detailed application that's required to go through the process. You hear all the time, I want to be able to give my property to my grandkids, and I don't want to have to pay an arm and a leg to do it. So, not that we're just rolling over for that either, but it is something that enters into the regulation as it's developed. So, we're trying to make sure that, that kind of thing can happen without a huge investment on the part of the applicant.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for the conversation. I just wanted to make sure it wasn't my emotions versus your emotions, that there was actual regulations and what they were, so I could understand that going forward.
And if you'd like to provide any input, I'd be welcome. The town is right now in the midst of rewriting our zoning, as John alluded to, and I'm looking for input. Emails, come in and see me. However you want to do it. Give me a call.
I think I'd like to take you up on that.
It sounds like you would. but in all seriousness, it is something that's welcome. So.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
This lot, this 10-acre lot that's being subdivided, who presently owns this?
It's the family of the Fishers. It's actually in the father's name, and he's deceased.
Okay, so this was subdivided into 4 lots a few months ago.
Right.
And now you're in front of us to re-subdivide one of those 4 lots into 2 lots, which to me makes this a 5-lot subdivision. Right? There's no property has changed hands, no transaction as far as of the original four lot subdivision in the sun.
No, it's all family.
Okay, but it's still the estate subdividing, except now instead of subdividing it into four lots, you're asking us to subdivide it into five lots. Right?
Yeah.
So that means this is a five lot subdivision.
And five.
We were asked to look at a parcel of land and divide it into two.
Okay, so what we're able to do is we're able to say that George Baker owns four lots, and now 6 months later, George Baker wants to take one of his four lots and split it into two.
And did he send it off to somebody else?
Well, that's why I was asking if it's been deeded off to somebody else, and apparently it has not.
It hasn't. Are you referring to the State Health Department? Five lot.
Well, there's a little more.
As long as there are.
If it's a five lot instead of a four lot, correct?
As long as they're over 5 acres.
As long as they're over 5 acres, we're okay. Thank you for reminding me.
Okay.
I learn something every meeting.
Yeah.
Some things I have to relearn every meeting.
And there's a lot of things you don't want.
Thank you.
Or did you try it?
Did you close the public hearing yet?
Okay. Any other questions this afternoon? None? Concerned? Well then, public hearing is closed. Or is there anything further that you would like to do to or before this afternoon? Oh, come on, there must be something.
Thank you.
Yes.
I need a motion to approve the case of subdivision.
Do I give preliminary approval?
I need a motion to give preliminary approval to the case of subdivision.
Motion's been made to grant preliminary approval to the case of subdivision. To the motion, do I have a second?
I'll second it.
Motion to make a second and further discussion.
As we already have a approved subdivision plan for the KC subdivision for the four lot, should we make this the Jacqueline B. Casey
subdivision?
That's smart.
That's who the applicant is?
That's who the applicant is, so I will be happy.
Okay.
Motion is in
that. Motion. Make a second for the discussion. If not, would you call the roll, please?
Mr. Arnold?
Aye.
Mr. Bergman?
Yes.
Ms. Perdue?
Yes.
Mr. Shaver?
Yes.
Ms. Matthews?
Yes.
Mr. Siebel?
Yes.
Mr. Jensen?
Aye. Looks like we have no negatives. Motion carries. Board, is there anything further that you'd like to do?
We need to waive that. So I'd like to make a motion that we waive the requirement for a separate meeting for final approval.
Motion's been made.
Because I don't believe this is too terribly controversial.
To waive the requirement for preliminary final approval being in separate meetings. To the motion, do I have a second?
I'll second
that. Motion's been made. Second. Any further discussion? If not, I'm going to drag it down. So call the roll, please.
Hey, Mr. Arnold?
Aye.
Mr. Bergman?
Yes.
Ms. Perdue?
Aye.
Mr. Shaver?
Yes.
Ms. Matthews?
Yes.
Mr. Siebel?
Yes.
Mr. Jensen?
Aye. I have 7 in the affirmative. Motion carries. Anything further you'd like to do?
Make a motion to grant final approval for the Jackson B. Casey subdivision, two lot subdivision.
Motion to make a second.
Awesome.
Motion to make a second. Any further discussion? Okay, now.
Mr. Arnold says aye. Mr. Bergman?
Yes.
Ms. Perdue?
Yes.
Mr. Shaver?
Yes.
Ms. Mathias?
Yes.
Mr. Siebold?
Yes.
Mr. Jensen?
Aye. I have the question confirmed. The motion carries. Board of Education.
I want to go.
I make a motion that the chairman and one of the members of the board sign the Mylar as presented to the planning department.
Motion made for the chair and the member of the board to sign the Mylar as presented to the board. Do I have a second? Motion been made and seconded. Any further discussion? I'll give you a break. That's not too controversial. Is that right?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstention? Motion carries.
Okay, that's finally done now.
Okay. Sure, thank you.
Thank you.
And just for clarification, we're no longer requiring two Mylars billed, just one.
Right.
Just one Mylar.
Oh, only one?
One, but give me a couple paper copies.
Okay. All right.
Thank you
very much. Oh, hey,
before you
talk
to
email, please.
Yes.
The wetlands marked on the other side of 32 says Army Corps, C-O-R-E-H-E-C-O-R-E.
Oh, yeah.
Matias. Yes. Matias.
Yes.
Partnership here with Mike Cucciar and Liza Schutz from Exam. The board has seen this presentation a few times, but it's prelude to our public hearing. We'll give the same presentation that we've given you. Mike would like to get started. Just to give a little background on Exam developer project.
Sure. Thank you, board. I'm going to be back in front of you. My name is Mike Cucciar from Exam. We're a company that was founded in 2007, so 14 years in business, based out of Boston, but been very active in New York State. As we've reviewed with you all, currently we have over 152 megawatts that represents about 34 projects operating right now in New York State, with another 35 projects currently in construction, slated to turn on and provide community solar power both to residents, small businesses, local hospitals, etc., who can benefit from these remote community solar sites and get the benefits of solar without having on their roof or home. Brief overview of community solar. Basically, what we do is we inject our power from these solar power plants into the grid. We receive credits from those projects. We cannot monetize those. We can't use those and cash them in. We need to sell them to subscribers. Exam has 10,000 subscribers across the state and growing. And what we're able to do is put those credits onto folks' bills at a discount. So if we put a $100 credit on their bill, they would pay us $90 for that and see their energy costs or their electricity costs be reduced by that 10%. 10% is typical for the state of what discounts residents can benefit from. And that could rise a little bit higher for the larger, what we call anchor off-takers. These are large commercial or, as I was discussing, some of the hospitals that we partnered with will receive a little bit more of a discount just because they're taking up a much larger portion of the project. But basically, it's a way to allow equitable access to solar energy. Exam, I think, stands out that, you know, we don't require FICO scores and other credit history in order to bring on our customers. Anyone's really able to come in as long as they have a national grid for this particular project, a national grid account for electricity in upstate New York. I'll do a quick overview of the project. It's a 2.5 megawatt AC solar project, 3.3 megawatts DC, and that'll become important if we talk about the system later. It's a single-axis tracker site, meaning that these panels move east to west in a way to increase production of electricity by tracking with the sun and making sure those panels are in the most optimal position to produce energy. It's approximately 13 acres. Yeah, a good fast about the, you know, good attribute I think of this site is that it's located in the industrial park. It's across a right of way, national grid right of way, with a natural tree line on its west side that would protect it from neighbors and protect the aesthetic visual area. So, yeah, and as far as long-term impacts, you know, basically these systems, there is no, besides the road and a small electrical concrete pad, there's really nothing there that is going to be physically built up. The racking of the systems are used either through piles or screw-based screws that come right out when this project is decommissioned. And it can easily be taken up and removed at the end of its life. Typically, these projects have a contract with National Grid for 25 years and lease extensions out to 40 should there be other opportunities, other programs that we can enroll it with further down the line. We have submitted a decommissioning plan and a bond form. The Burge has reviewed that. We are working through those comments and we'll be resubmitting ahead of time the final version. We don't have any issues with the majority of their comments. I think there are two areas that we want to clarify, just how much we should escalate the cost in the future. I think there was a 2% number in there, which we can certainly work with over time. And then we want to talk through sort of the bonding component of the project. So, other than that, we think we can respond to that adequately, and I don't think we're too far off base based on that letter from where we were. And then the final piece of this, you know, once we are operational, this really, we will be a very quiet neighbor in the community after construction is complete, which would take anywhere between 6 to 9 months. Someone would be on site maybe 2 to 4 times a year for routine maintenance and operation and checking. So that's it on basically the basic overview of the project. Charles, I'm going to show some other slides.
Yep, just location of the site, as we know, it's in the industrial park. The industrial park is outlined here in red. It's our site is here. This map, 32-acre site. As Mike mentioned, it's a 2.5 megawatt AC solar project. Just town zoning map here. Of course, the industrial park is in the M1 zone. Electric power generation facilities such as this are permitted in that zone, with just site plan review by the planning board. So close up on an aerial view, again, the industrial park is outlined in red, and our site is this parcel here. The National Grid Power Corridor that Mike mentioned runs through here. The access road into the industrial park is in this location, and our access into the site is here. At one point, we had talked about an orderly access, but you'll recall we went back to access along this paper street here. This is one of the pages of the site plan that you all have, but I think it's a little bit easier to take a look at this on Google Earth. I've changed the rotation on you here, but again, it is the industrial park main paved road, access into the site here. Road starts off as a 20-foot wide gravel road, the first 50 to 60 feet or so, and then next down to a 15-foot wide access road, and eventually 12 feet wide within the internal workings of the array. The entire array is located on the west side of the power lines. It's surrounded by a 7-foot high fence outlined in, represented by the yellow line there. The actual panels are in blue here, oriented in the north-south direction. A single centrally located transformer, an inverter pad, collecting the energy and exporting it out through a line of the underground to about here, where it comes up to a series of poles to connect to the National Grid overhead line. As I mentioned, in the M1 zone, the electric generating facility is permitted by site plan review. We were back before the board in April with preliminary review. received a sign-off from the county's engineer on stormwater back in June, initiated coordinated review, back in April also, and of course here tonight for the public hearing.
Thank you. Any questions on the system? If not? Yes.
Mike, you have subscribers for this project. Are they in the row or are they in the state?
Yeah, good question. I will confirm, but this project is probably too early. We're about ready to start subscribing, so we have not put subscribers on. We would love to, you know, reach out locally, and we can certainly start here. So this project does not have subscribers just yet.
But it's not limited to a certain region. You can do any, you know, have subscribers who are on National Grid anywhere.
Anywhere in the National Grid service area of upstate New York, yes.
I just got a letter in the documents for architectural review, excuse me, archaeological. That thing is still going on in New York State Government Park Association and Historic Preservation.
Yep. I know we've had to redo the access road, but trustee must be on that.
Yeah, so I'll finish it up today. And we had, there was an ongoing process with OPRAP. Remember, we switched the access road locations there. Okay. And I'll get you the final on for OPRAP if it's not already in the file. Can you go there? It doesn't matter.
It sounds like they don't want you to look at it safely.
Yeah, so, you know, it's interesting. SHPO, for the longest time on these projects, they only required us to do the actual shovel testing along the road corridor and where there was going to be trenching. This one, for some reason, they required more testing within the actual array itself. And so that's that initial correspondence with OPRHP. They asked us to come back and do that additional testing, which has been done along with the access roads.
Yeah,
it's been long
completed.
Yeah.
Okay, so that should be.
Yeah. It should be in file in open
case.
So we're working right now with our internal construction team to put together that estimate. So what we're doing is getting more detailed. We submitted a decommissioning plan, which was a little bit broader, using some older information that we had. So we're going to bring that up to 2021, you know, kind of prices. I think that was the question. I have a few clarifying questions on how they want to see and how the town would want to see sort of the escalation. What's the cost of decommissioning today versus 25, 30, or something like that. So we can work on that. We're going to hit and be a lot more detailed when we resubmit. We can surely resubmit after this meeting.
Okay, so you're working with the birds, though. You're going to do the items
with them. Yeah, ultimately, it'll be a response to the birds with the updated decommissioning plan. And then, actually, what this board, I think, will do eventually is any approval you make will be conditioned on the town board review of that decommissioning plan. What I would expect to happen is we'll submit, you know, after the public hearing in September, are there any other changes? We'll submit the updated decommissioning plan for the Council of Verge and the site plan, and eventually this board will give a site plan approval condition on the town board accepting the decommissioning plan, because they're ultimately the ones who have to accept the decommissioning on the plan, the town board.
And then, we will now move to the environmental assessment form for this project, having had an opportunity to review part one for any questions, comments, or concerns concerning the item in part one of the paper also. If not, then we'll go speedily option part two. First one is no. And if you select a yes, you have a laundry list of sub bullets under there, and you have two choices. No, or small impact may occur, or a moderate impact may occur. Number one, the impact on the land. The building actions may involve construction on or physical alterations of land surface or proposed site. Yes or no?
Yes.
I don't think so. I just want to conclude. The proposed action may involve construction on land where depth of water table is less than 3 feet. Proposed action may involve construction on slope 15% or greater. Proposed action may involve construction on land where bedrock is exposed or generally within 5 feet of existing ground surface. Proposed action may involve excavation and removal of more than 1,000 tons of natural material. Proposed action may involve construction that continues for more than 1 year or in multiple phases. Proposed action may result in increased erosion, whether from physical disturbance or vegetation removal. Proposed action is or may be located within a coastal hazard area. Okay. In fact, on geological feature, proposed action results in modification or destruction of a habitat access to the unique or unusual land or on the site. Such as this new mineral fossil cave. In fact, surface water proposed action may affect one or more wetlands or other surface water bodies. Question groundwater. Proposed action may result in new or additional use of groundwater, or may have the potential to introduce contaminants to groundwater or an aquifer. Proposed action may result in development of land subject to flooding. In fact, in here, proposed action may including a state-regulated transmission source. In fact, if you recommend, proposed action may result in the loss of flora or fauna. Does that have any recommendation?
No.
You have a topic of the paper. Order to determine it's time to agree that it's a little bit of an effect, but...
Yeah, I have the sort of question you intended to discuss whether it's a little
bit of an effect. So, acceptable triggers, proposed actions may cause reduction of population of less than individual of any threatened or endangered species listed in our state assessment level and in society found out in here. Proposed actions may result in the reduction or degradation of the habitat used by any rare, threatened, or endangered species. Those actions may cause reduction in population or loss of individuals of any species of special concern or conservation use of this in their state or federal government.
No.
Proposed action results in the reduction of degradation of any habitat due to any species of special concern and conservation need of not the mayor, state, or federal government.
One thing I noticed
concern, and I think we will address it relative to the ending of that.
All I can tell you is we do have a letter from DEC in here. I'll read it into the record. Letter of No Jurisdiction Endangered Species Act. The Department of Environmental Conservation has determined that your proposal to develop the above described parcels in the town of Monroe is not likely to result in the take of threatened or endangered species. This determination is based on the information submitted by your office on June 4th, 2021 and reviewed by staff in the Division of Fish and Wildlife. Though Hooker's orchid was known to occur in the vicinity of the site, there are no orchids on these properties. Therefore, no permit is required at this time pursuant to implementing the regulations of the New York State Endangered Species Act. Be advised that any changes in location, expansion of the footprint of the project, modifications of the scope, or changes in the timing of proposed actions that are not identified in the submission referenced above may trigger DEC authorization. Please reinitiate contact with this office if such activities are contemplated. Please note this letter does not relieve your responsibility for obtaining necessary permits and approvals from other agencies or local municipalities. And this is in reference to Monroe Industrial Park, tax ID numbers 50.4-28, 27, and 26 in the town of Monroe, Saratoga County.
And I think what I was referring to is the comment on the slip from the verge, where they noted that Fish and Wildlife, as well as DEC, should be consulted. And we folks responded that U.S. Fish and Wildlife.
Well,
the Indian
bat
may be present, and that you're
going to
try to work around that.
Yeah, so with about looking at limits you've cleared into a certain window from November to March, basically.
No. determination about the final numbers that we talked about in terms of the chip overview?
Yeah, that's what I'm, you know, the letter from the state parks is saying they acknowledge that a phase 1B is appropriate to undertake, and they're essentially saying they'll review that, you know, when it's done, and they'll study the conclusions that it reaches and see if they concur or not. That's essentially what they're saying. And that is a letter dated February 16th, 2021, to that effect. In my opinion, I think the best you can do is a condition neg deck, you know, if you want to go there. A conditioned negative declaration that it is, in fact, found that there are no archaeological, you know.
We've done the studies, and if you're someone who wants to go ahead and condition it, we'll provide it for the next meeting. If we don't have it, we'll open Cedar back up.
But it is an open item right now, as it stands, the archaeological study.
What I'm going to think about is that the town board went through this when they created the park, and they had designated certain areas, I can't remember earlier, that had been set aside because they were archaeologically sensitive.
That's a very good point.
That's what I thought I understood when we did the pellet plant. That there was, that they said that that area they were working in was already reviewed. So.
And it's for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Okay. In fact, in open space and recreation, both actions involve the loss of recreational opportunities and the reduction of open space resources is, as indicated in the doctor. In fact, in CES, that can be located in two critical parts of the area. The fact that energy possession will cause an increase in use of energy for energy.
It's kind of the opposite.
In fact, in the noise order, both that may result in an increase in noise over or out of noise. In fact, in the noise order, we have in fact a given help and exposure to new resistant sources of contaminants. Consistency with the end of plants. Close action is not consistent with adaptive land site use plants.
No,
it's not. That's a negative question. Both action is not consistent with adaptive land use.
You're saying no, it's not.
You said no, but I'm going to say
it's not. It's always the issue with this
question. No, the question is saying that it's not allowed, and we're saying that that's wrong.
That's right.
That's a no.
Consistency with the adaptive land use. So the question is inconsistent with the adaptive land use. Sure.
Solar
condition upon the acceptance of the archaeological review.
Motion made by Mr. Rear Second, I think.
Second.
Okay, motion has been made and seconded. Any further discussion? If not, Ms. Caldwell.
Mr. Arnold?
Aye.
Mr. Bergman?
Yes.
Ms. Perdue?
Aye.
Mr. Shaver?
Yes.
Ms. Matias?
No.
Sir?
Recuse.
Recuse?
Yeah.
And Mr. Siebold?
Yes.
Mr. Jensen?
I have a 6 in favor and 1 abstention. Motion carries. Okay. Now we'll move on to the one. We have scheduled the public hearing for this project, and that's the times when it was advertised to begin. So again, keeping with our public hearings, we have a few basic ground rules. First one is that if anyone has a comment or a question they would like to ask, concerning this project, we encourage and invite them to do so. Second one is your options, whether you'd like to have anyone else have a comment, you'd like to have a name over. So if it's active seeking for the comments, it's important. And the third, probably the most important ground rule, is through the whole process, we will maintain some sense of decorum. For that, is there anyone present who would like to make a comment or concern for the public hearing for Richard Paul Solar? Yes, sir.
Vincent Spohr, 163 Port Edward Road. My property is south of the industrial park. In 1990, they did some work down by the river which developed the industrial park. In that process, they constructed a road from mining road, from the Fort Edward Road to the river, which I now own. There is a creek with 2 36-inch culverts. It's in a hole probably 30 feet deep from the top of the road. My concern is stormwater runoff from your area. That creek that runs on the west side of your solar array is a creek that merges with another one. I believe that's by the Fort Edward Road and Sisson Road. So I was trying to understand, and there was quite a bit of data in there about theoretical water and stormwater. And what I'm trying to understand is, I think you had 2 retention bases. Is that correct?
I can explain this to you.
On your dog ground?
There's a couple of retention basins here and in here. And what they do is they just treat the stormwater from the gravel access road.
Okay.
So
what I'm concerned about is the site itself.
Yes.
So there'll be no vegetation on that site for, well, it was what, 32 acres or so?
So what happened is it gets cleared, it gets replanted in a wildflower mix.
In what?
A wildflower mix.
Yeah.
Mix. And then what under the current stormwater regulations, what DEC recognizes is that if your distance between the panels is at least as wide as the width of the panels themselves, then they don't consider the runoff from the panels to be contrary to flow. So in other words, it's going to runoff panel,
yeah,
you've got enough width before the next runoff for it to infiltrate into the
So where does the water go?
It infiltrates just like it does now.
Well, we've got trees here.
Yep, and so when we do, when we run through all the stormwater calculations, we can show the proposed development runoff rate is less than...
So when we had the 5 inches of rain here a couple of weeks ago, what, how did that fit into the calculation of the potential runoff?
So DEC requires us to analyze certain storm events. We analyze the 10-year, 25-year, 100-year storm events. 5 inches would be a close to 100-year storm event.
But that's quite frequent. You know?
We go by the DEC regulations.
Yeah, but that doesn't help me if if that creek decides to flush out all the trees and branches and things because there's a sudden surge of water through it and plugs off some 36-inch pipes. This all that theoretical stuff really doesn't matter.
So we comply with
I understand you have to use some criteria.
We use the criteria that's prescribed by the DEC, and then the town engineer reviews it and okays it.
I have on my property about 130 acres that's undeveloped. It's other than farming, okay, and a little bit of woods. And in that 5 inches of rain fall, actually we had 4 at my place, 3 in about 25 minutes. We had what I would consider to be a stormwater runoff system failure. Okay? Our system stayed intact, our infrastructure stayed intact, but it overwhelmed the infrastructure that we had in place. It all stayed within our grass swales, so it wasn't an environmental nightmare, but it still was much more water than I'm proposed to manage. Okay, that was on land with no development at all. Okay, so with a project like this, and Travis, please, by all means, correct me if I'm wrong. I'll be the first one to say it happens a lot. Okay, what you're saying is that there's a certain amount of stormwater that's going to sheep off of these panels, but because there's open ground, not open ground, vegetated ground in between them, that's treated by that vegetated ground. So that would mean if DEC is correct on this, then what you would have is exactly what you saw when that 5 inches of rain fell 3 weeks ago. I'm guessing those 36-inch wells were pretty well full, right?
I mean, there's two problems there. One main problem is that all these creeks are not kept clean.
Right.
There's branches, trees, roots, you name it.
But that situation...
I've had it already happen to me once.
But that situation already exists.
Yes.
It's not something that's necessarily going to be exacerbated by this project.
Oh, I disagree. So, but that's your... I just want to go on record to say that I'm very concerned about the runoff with the creek. The creek is right there. When you look at grading, how do you grade that? Do you grade it towards the retention and away from the creek, or do you leave it as is?
These sites stay largely as is. There's no grading that happens. If you look at where the solar panels are located, they're up on a higher flat terrain.
They're on a high ground. But how do you grade the high ground?
No. The only grading that occurs is the roadway. Yeah, it's a major roadway.
Oh. I go on record to say I got an issue with that, and I think it has the potential of creating an issue with my culverts.
I guess what I would recommend is this. If it turns out that you're correct and their engineers and DEC are wrong, you should get a hold of the planning department.
Well, I think I talked to Jim there about it. You had also the Army Corps. Weren't they supposed to also look at this?
No, the Army Corps is involved on a wetland review. There are no wetlands here. The only thing to look at here in terms of stormwater is the DEC regulations that he's trying to comply with. Army Corps is on a wetland issue.
I guess I got the impression in one of your meetings you said the DO, Department of Environmental Conservation and Army Corps engineers were going
If there's a wetland issue.
Oh.
But there are no wetland issues with this particular plant.
Well, and the other thing, I guess, just I find it a little bit hard to understand is cutting trees down to put solar cells. From an environmental standpoint, there is also deer habitat.
It just
doesn't set right for some reason.
I understand the concern. I can take a stab at that. So when we've looked at that before and thought through it, is it worth it to cut those trees? The amount of carbon reduction that they could do versus the carbon reduction we're getting from replacing fossil fuels and the lifetime of this project will far outpace what would have been sequestered by that forest. So that would be my response in that case.
It's also important to note that this is being located in a manufacturing zone. So really what these solar panels are doing is replacing a potential manufacturing facility in a paved parking lot, not trees. It's not a wooded zone. It's not a resource-protected zone where land resources are protected. It's a manufacturing zone. So what's supposed to go in there is factories and manufacturing facilities.
Well, I never realized until this project that west of that, the Mohegan Batentail line, was part of the industrial park.
And I got to say, personally, I see this as a really benign usage of that land that's right out behind a bunch of residential lots.
Right.
I mean, of all the things that I would want in my backyard, I think I'd rather have really quiet solar panels than I would agree with you if this was a wooded parcel that was resource protected and they wanted to strip the trees out and put solar panels on. But being that it's a manufacturing zone, the allowed use is a...
I understand the industrial zone.
Any good minutes? More questions? Concerns?
This is going back and forth every meeting. Is this an AC or a DC installation?
DC.
Okay. Well, it's both. What's being installed on the ground is DC. The power coming out of it gets turned into AC, so it could match.
DC panels with an inverter to AC.
Correct.
Okay. I've seen it on our description here is 2.5 megawatts AC, and then up here it's AC, and then other ones have said DC, and I just want to make sure that's what I thought it was.
Yeah, and the reason why I brought up that distinction earlier is that our decommissioning plan is based on the DC size, but that will match the number of panels. But
right.
We do speak in AC because that's how the utilities see this project. They don't care about the DC side, they only
count
power. Yeah, exactly.
They don't care about your manufacturing process. They just want one product you're selling.
Right.
So.
And the other reason is the one that confuses us.
It gives you an opportunity to sound like you know what you're talking about, even if you don't. So I appreciate that. Any opportunity to talk about that.
Just one, can I ask one more question? Oh, sure, we're going to go through here.
And maybe it's off, maybe it shouldn't be asked, I don't know.
Does that property get assessed? Is there a tax on the solar project, on that solar array?
All properties get taxed. Most all properties get taxed.
Yeah. Most of them.
I don't know. That would be something you'd have to take up with the town board and how that gets handled. That's not something that...
You can call the assessor.
You
can call the assessor, but it is value added. So there will be an increase in assessment. Now, is there some sort of, credit or, break given to solar usage? I don't know, but I know it is value added.
Yep. So it can be assessed. We will be seeking a pilot payment in lieu of taxes for 15 years. It will pay taxes. But the idea is that we seek from the town, county, and school district a stabilization of taxes for the first 15 years. It's expected to go beyond up to 25. After that, it will go to full assessment. And that's something that we would negotiate with all three of those entities.
The point is, an industrial park is paid by the taxpayers. And that was 30 years ago? 30 years. Right? 90?
It was established for the town.
1990.
I don't know if the taxpayers paid for it.
Wow. There's the sewer,
yes.
The water.
That's part of the establishment.
Right.
Yep.
And it was a swap between GP and National Grid, if I remember correctly.
I don't know if your project is that. I know some of the towns that worked out pilots that are directly linked to the number of megawatts that are produced by the solar panels. It's an interesting thing with solar panels because technically these aren't permanent structures.
Yeah.
It can be argued that these are temporary structures, okay? So usually there's a, that's where the pilot comes in and you start planning the project. They get taxed.
Must be more surprises he's going to have. And that is unusable. Anyone who uses a lot or occupies a lot in the industrial park is by jungle will be required to pay the percentage of the road improvement cost that has occurred by the town when this board when this park is created. And that is based on the number of buildable acres that you are going to get by the time it's 2 months. Every buildable acre is a percentage of the total, and that will assess that percentage of the amount that has been expended to create highway improvements when this park is created. You don't want to hide that in the screen at the last minute, but I'm always the big mouth that comes there.
Thank you.
No, that's not really what he wants to say.
It's actually kind of an important point because electric drive is an unimproved right of way right now.
Right.
And that's the fee that will be used to improve that.
And they spend the funds to work on the highway from 187 up to 5. That's where we get chunked up. I guess I've got enough. Anything further than that? Closed, or you are expecting some additional information, and I don't want to have it in our consultants. Is that correct?
We don't have to watch it.
I'd also like to see progress on response to the church. And Jim, did LaVerge respond to EDP's response to the SWIFT?
No.
So I think we
did that. They signed off on the SWIFT?
I don't think I've seen it.
Okay, I'll get it for you. Should be a letter, Jim.
Oh, I do have it here. I do have it. Yes. Yep, they did. Out of the room. Did you adopt the neg deck?
Yes.
Okay. Dental subdivision ninja.
Okay. I think he wants this.
You can leave it up.
I'll set it up, guys.
Thank you. It's 2 R's. G-A-R-R-Y.
So I am Gary Robinson, consulting engineer, and I represent Dental Contractors. Two partners. Unfortunately, neither one of them could be here tonight, so I'm all alone. They purchased this approximately 5-acre parcel some time ago from Garden Management, and are looking to subdivide it into 4 lots. Two of the lots that are actually flag lots. They have 40 foot front of each. And the other two lots both exceed the minimum required for that zone. We propose a common driveway to go up pretty much in that middle property line, and driveways to come off and service these two lots here. Of course, these driveways that come up here are actually on the property of these lots. We submitted a boundary agreement, an easement agreement, for your review. We used it probably 5 other times, and up to 5 lots. It was done by an attorney, and hopefully if you have any comments, we can get some comments tonight. But I don't know, these attorneys, they all like something a little different, so I'm not sure. So water exists on Route 197. What we're doing is taking a feed up from 197. This one goes up, obviously. The two middle ones are on their property, and so are these other ones that come off the main road up to this point. We talked to Jesse about this. Jesse seemed to be good with it. There's a light right here down on the main road that's already there. And that's within the requirement for the dead end road water fire access. There were some questions before. Let's stick with the lots. It's an area where there's been a lot of stormwater issues, and there's been a lot of groundwater issues, I think. I don't know about stormwater. Groundwater, I've heard a lot about over the years. And what we did was we went out there and we completed over here. We have all the info on the test pits that we did. Jim talked to me about having blue meals, a stormwater crew from the county to go out there with us just so we could look at it and give us what information or what thoughts he had while we were out there. And indeed, he came out and Matt came out and watched the test pits that we did. Nobody stayed for the perk test, but you know, it doesn't really show a lot that they were involved. So the lot is essentially filled with, this lot was low when this subdivision up here was done, so it needed to be filled just like these 4 lots here were. And so I guess Gardner brought in some fill onto the lots, and you can see that the test pit is very wide from what's there on the site. Most of it on the top, probably the last material they brought in, is mostly silts and clays. Some of the material down below is a little better. But at any rate, on each of these lots, we do indicate where there was mottling, which everybody's probably familiar with that nowadays, and where the groundwater was actually running. There was no rock anywhere. We didn't run into any rock. And then what we did was we took those numbers and we went to each of the lots and we came up with a little layout on each site where we have a minimum height that's required. So there's a minimum amount of fill that has to go on each lot to bring everything up high enough so that the septic systems will work and we won't have any issues with the water coming up into the bottom of the leach field, right, that bottom stone. We also had elevations for each house. The town has a rule that you have to be at least 2 foot above seasonal high groundwater for the bottom of the footing. So we came up with an elevation for that number. And those all appear over here on this right here and the little coating over there to tell you what things are. And it gives you those elevations that we have showing up here to say where these lots have to be. Generally, they're all filled. I think one of them may not be, but just with the weight, type of house that they'll have to do, I mean, there won't be any foundations on this house. It'll probably be like a raised ranch or a split level or something like that. So that's how we came up with this layout here. Obviously, the layout is something that we did just as an example. I mean, we don't know when somebody decides to buy a house, they may want this house back here. These guys may want it up there. They, you know, who knows where people are going to put things. I did show a garage in there. Just kind of show that everything would fit. These are all what we call shallow fill systems that are here, and the details are on the fourth sheet. Okay, so let's see. We took care of water. We took care of sewer. We got the road straight now. So the next thing is the stormwater here. There was some conversations last time about the stormwater. Unfortunately, we couldn't get all the information together to come last month, so that's why we skipped the month. It was a visit that we didn't want to see. We just couldn't get things together. Mm-hmm. But at any rate, we went back and looked. Actually, Mark Stewart, he's one of the partners. We went back and looked and got some minutes from when this project up here, these four lots were actually approved. And this is what's actually there in the field. There's a catch basin over here on the other side of Three Fox Drive. There's a culvert that goes underneath and goes right here, and then there's a ditch that runs into the northern end of this this little pond that's there. It comes in off our property. There isn't a pipeline that goes in there. It's just a ditch that comes down through. This is a little pond. As far as it's been existing, as far as I remember back when we represented town, it was still a pond that was there. And I think pretty much, you know, that pond level is not a lot different from what groundwater might be. But anyway, the pond is, I've never seen it not full. I've seen it probably five or six times in the past. As part of this, there was a couple things that went on with that approval. One of the approvals was that there would be an easement here on the plan. I don't know if that was done or not. I didn't see any information on that. I don't know if you saw any of that, Jim. But
you have to pull the deed to that lot to check.
Yeah, but that is not on our property. This isn't on our property. This is, Jim and I talked about it, and we said, you know, what we need, what you need from our side of it is to say that, look, we're not gonna fill this pond in, we're not gonna modify it at all, and we're going to give you a conservation easement. We show those lines on there, what we propose, just to keep it away from the banks of the pond. And this actually comes in and it runs down an outlet down to Route 197, and there's a 24-inch culvert right here that goes under the road. You probably saw the DOT, I think it was 2 years ago now, that they were out there doing work on the culvert and the pond system and what happens downstream. So I think it's as good as it's going to get right now. I was out and looked at this pond, and you remember that, and if you did look at those minutes from that meeting, one of the things that was said, in fact, the real one said is that we needed to make those banks a little, not quite as steep. The banks on the side were fairly steep at the time we were out there, and we were concerned that maybe somebody would just ladder over there and they might not, you know, you think you're stepping into a nice beach or something, and you step down and you're down 2 feet in the water. And it's muddy, and who knows what can happen. So we said, you know, we think that they should make that slope 45 degrees or something, and that this area should be fenced. As far as I can see, I don't think anything was done out there. I can tell you that this side is like a beach. You walk out. I took a stick around and just kind of poked to see what was where and how it was. And this side is all pretty much it still fit across pretty good so that there's no steep drop into that pond. Same with up underneath here, this area up here. You know, whatever comes in here is ended up going right to the top of that pond. So it's slowly, you know, getting, there's a little less volume in it. On the sides, again, I don't see that anything was done there. It doesn't look horrible, but, you know, it might, maybe it should have something done with the side slopes. Like I said, the fence wasn't around it. We can't do, you know, I talked to these guys and I said, look, probably we're going to have to do a fence. I mean, now you own it. What was supposed to be there before wasn't done. So you're probably going to have to take care of this stuff. And he said, fine, we don't have a problem with that. We don't have a problem with the easement. So the thing with the fence is we can't do it off our property. We can only do the fence down to our property. So it's going to leave this open here, and it's going to leave that open there. So
actually, you own that property on the bottom?
We own this property up there?
No. On the other side, towards 197?
Towards 197.
That there you own.
This property we do own, right yes. Down through this ditch.
Yep.
We do own that property. Since the survey was done that we had from Van Dusen and Steve's, there was a couple of things that you saw. If you looked at the original survey, there was a couple of things that happened. One was this property was supposed to be traded from this guy, and this would be Gardner's, and that would be for these people. That part hasn't happened. This part has happened. On this side, except we're on that, let's go to the other side, because there was some question on this too. There's a really small, used to be a really small mat uniform out there, so the width was a uniform. And same over here, it was a swap of property. And this one did get done. That one is not done. Some of these things are pending. This does show, this is what shows on the tax map now. But I actually called real property to see if anything had changed and what was what. And they said, yeah, this is the way it is right now. We have a map, we don't have a deed. Apparently the deeds need to be done. And then the other one is there was a piece up here under the original subdivision, and that was going to this neighbor up here, and that did get done. Actually, there's two pieces, that little stick, and then this right here, that did get done. Those went to this owner over here. Still shows that as a separate parcel. But they're both owned by this guy. So, this, with the property lines, that's what we found. We have the, if you want to look at, we do have the, that's actually what was on the original plan for this Three Fox Road right here, subdivision. So this is what it looks like. That's where that comes down. That's where it is. All lines up. I mean, it's the same.
I gave you a copy of that in your packets. I would love
that.
Yeah,
you should have that. And that's how I got it. Jim gave me one too. So.
And we also gave you, I also gave you a copy of the minutes from that meeting night. And there's also a letter in there from Scott Reese, who was a, I think, I don't know, a consulting engineer at the time. He did a pond analysis, quote unquote, on that pond. I'll give you a copy of that as well.
Yeah. So if you look at what Mr. Reese was saying, he was saying that the ponds was pretty much, you know, kind of raw at that point. It was filled in with leaves, and it was, you know, he had some pictures in that report that you got. If you looked at those, pretty much it's what it looks like today, because I was there earlier today. And what he's saying is, you know, supposedly this doesn't do much. It provides, it just takes overflow from things that come down this road. So I don't know how much goes through it, but what he's saying was that it was big enough, and it does what it does, and it's not really part of that stormwater up there. This was the original survey that we had, which is, this is where the swap was going to happen from here to there. And then there was a swap that was going to happen from here to there. And then this one had already gotten done when that was, when they did that survey, which was in 18. Okay, so we can, you know, can we put a fence across that? We can. We do own that property.
Well, the owner of lot 3 is going to own that little throat down to 197, correct?
Right, that's right. Yeah, that's all going to lot 3. We did take out the, we were going to try to combine this with that lot, but I guess we said at the last meeting, that's what we were saying, was that's not really going to work. It'd be better if it stays part of this. And that this, which we didn't know at the time, was already there, was already connected, so that this would become part of it. So now, at least this, which we control now, can be all together with part of this lot. Unfortunately, we don't, you know, we can't do anything about that. But I had some notes down here on the conservation easement, what Jim and I talked about. And we have that going across the top when the surveyors actually, once we get the lots all straightened out, when the surveyors do that, they would give a meets and bounds description for that easement.
You're going to grant that easement too.
I don't think we're granting it to anybody.
No, it's a means of protecting it. It's not granting. It's granting protection to that area. It's not to the favor of anybody.
So it's not an easement. Basically,
covenant. What I've come to understand is whether you like it or not. I don't know if this would be done today, but what's happening here is there's a drainage system that is transcending from what was the Deer Park subdivision, you know, to the north of this. Through this site, across 197, and through many properties to the south. I'm not sure I fully understand an exact number.
Does it ultimately tie into a public sewer or water line or system?
No.
No. See, that's the thing, Ann. This has been a drainage system that's kind of established over time over private property. And, you know, there is a downstream element to this that is outside the control of any public entity that's privately owned. And hopefully it hangs together and continues to work and operate. Like Gary said, to the extent that there is a public involvement here, it does cross 197 and the state cleaned it up at that point. But, yeah, in my opinion, the best thing that can be done here is that covenant to protect this as a part of that drainage system and have no development in it. And after that, I don't know how much else can be done.
That's a good first step.
It may be the only step, but it's a good first, yeah. I don't know what other steps would remain short of creating a drainage district through all these properties, but someday.
Well, I don't know if you need to create a drainage district, but you certainly, as far as I'm concerned, need to have some kind of allowance for access to it.
Yeah. Yep. And that can be in the covenant.
Because what you're doing right now is you're saying we're going to put a conservation restriction. I agree, it's not a restriction on it says that whoever owns lot 3 can't fill that pocket.
Right.
Okay. That's great, yeah. But there's nothing on it that says that the person that buys lot 3 now has to maintain the stormwater system for that end of Great Box or that particular development. That would be stupid. Okay, but somebody needs to be able to have access to that if that system fails up in there, right?
And I don't know that you can assign that to a party or an entity. I don't know who that would be. In my opinion, I think it needs to be restricted and access allowed for maintenance of that drainage way.
I mean,
and not to anybody's favor or
The idea was when those last four lots were done on Great Box Drive, that pond was on the developer's land still and was part of that development.
Yes.
Okay. At that point, he had access from 197 to manage it. Made it very clear that he could get in there and manage it if need be. And then he had already done that because he had cleaned out the ditch that goes out to 197. All right. And then that had solved the problem. So obviously it's something that's necessary. Okay. I think at this time, he still had that capacity to access that site from 197. Now, if the developer would like to develop that as a building lot, I still think that I personally would like to see some kind of an easement that allowed some entity in the future, all right, access to that.
Well, no, I think it should be a covenant that conserves the area for drainage and that access be allowed to maintain that drainage.
That's all.
Not to the town, not to the state. I think that's the best we can do given the hand we're dealt here.
What's
being drained in there? There's a catch basin right here. Off the town road. No, it's on Great Box Drive.
Which is the town road. It's on the other side of the town road and it's the end of that development.
Oh, okay, just hold it then. Yeah. So it's a catch basin for a town road. So this town, it's a drainage system for the town road going into this pond.
That's right.
So the town does not own that pond.
Correct. And
there's a problem. I mean, if we're draining stuff off our road into somebody else's pond,
this is more than just the road draining.
Well, right now, the town highway does not take over the drainage ponds and subdivisions, the maintenance of those. Right.
No, but they're responsible for the drainage off the roads.
Right? So this type of covenant wouldn't restrict the town from being able to maintain that. It just doesn't name them exclusively.
You'd be happy to name them exclusively.
I don't think Paul Joseph will accept that.
No.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. Then Paul needs to find somewhere else for his drainage to go.
This isn't draining the road, though. Mike, this is the point. This isn't like just draining the runoff from the road. This manages the stormwater from
the surface area,
chunk of that
the watershed
development.
So we're talking just surface water.
Yes. But it isn't like this is a catch basin for the road.
Well,
the road that catches the water.
I'm not sure. It's not exclusively for the road. Let's put it that way.
Right.
The road may, in fact, drain in there, but it's not exclusively for the road. It comes from other areas as well.
I just have a problem, even if the road may drain in there, that somewhere the town has got some responsibility. That's my concern. So I think it needs to be clarified. Either the town does or does not have.
I characterize it as the town does not have responsibility. They have a right to access, but it's not their responsibility.
My problem is we're taking something from a town road and putting it on private property. I don't think we should be doing that.
Well, we do that right now with storm ponds, right? But the private property is of an HOA. And then the HOA is to maintain it. And the only difference here is we don't have that entity to maintain. It's not that highly developed of a system.
I mean, we can list the town on it. It doesn't mean they have to. I don't care. It doesn't matter to us.
I think it simply needs to say.
Just like we have.
There's a right to access to maintain that drainage if needs be. And you don't name a party. Now maybe Carla should review that and make sure she's comfortable with it. But to me, that's the only thing that can be done in consideration of the other aspects of this entire drainage way through this area.
I Let's be honest, though. Who would maintain it if it wasn't the town? There is no HOA for this development. I don't see anybody in there saying, hey, let's start an HOA.
So now we got town people going in on private property. That's my concern.
Yeah, but if this covenant is written in that manner, then they would have the right to do that.
And that
the legal right to do that.
That happens already in this town. Where my father-in-law lives down off of Davidson, there's drainage ditches that are part of his lot. He is not allowed to dump stuff in them, and the town has the right to come on there, his property, and clear those ditches out. It's part of the stormwater plan for that particular development. So it's not out of the question that the town doesn't own it, but has to have access to it. I just don't know what other entity would maintain this. It's not like the developer's going to set up an escrow or some kind of an estate thing that provides maintenance fees for that or anything, and there is no homeowners association. And there's not likely these people that live there are going to start one.
No.
So it really does fall on the town that would have to maintain it. I just want to make sure that somebody can access it in case this pond fills up with silt.
Right.
Or something, and somebody has to do something. I don't want a homeowner going, yeah, I'm not going to let you on my property. You know, and nothing can be done at that point. So really, I think that the access should have come from Great Fox Drive, and I expressed that meeting.
What I think would be appropriate is for the applicant to develop some language for that covenant and present it to Carla for her review on behalf of the board.
I'm okay with that.
Not just conserving the site or protecting the site, but also access to it.
Allow for access. To me, it's two basic needs. We need it conserved as a drainage way, and then you need the right to access it. But there has to be access to it to maintain it. And I don't know if we can get as detailed as to say who should have that right to maintain it or not. Maybe if Carla thinks we should, then fine. But
that would be a Carla question for me.
Are we looking for some formal document with legalese attached to it, or is what we have listed down there?
I don't think it's a formal document, Gary, but it is going to be a covenant in the deed for this lot. And that's where the language is going to need to be.
Okay.
And again, consistent with the conversation I had with Mark Stewart, I don't see the point in naming an entity, because it could be several. So there just needs to be the right to maintain a drainage way, and it needs to be conserved for that.
I suppose there's some possibility that in the future the people that live up in that development will decide to start an HOA just to fund the maintenance of that stormwater pond, right?
I don't know why.
I wouldn't want to touch that with a 10-foot pole. But I, in the immediate need, I could see it being the state or the town, given where this
right.
is located.
Can I change gears here? I would be proposing that the residents in Lot 1 and Lot 4 access to the residents.
Access to the residence?
Mm-hmm. Driveway.
Access to the driveway? We have those driveways shown right there, and that would be part of the easement
okay.
that we have. So, I mean, I show them right there because I put a garage on each one of these sites, but the garage might be up here, yeah. each field might be down here, so that might change and move up here, maybe it'll be right across from you, who knows what.
We don't want that.
Right. We didn't put in here that they can't, but that was the intent, that they wouldn't have access from the side road.
You do that when you create a three intersection, which you can handle with one if you have a common drive.
Right. That was the whole idea of wanting a common drive, so that we could get those driveways off the main road.
Gary, would the developer stipulate to that then?
That they can't? I think they probably would. I think they would. They're not thinking that they're...
Is that where you're going, Peter? Is that what you'd like to see?
Yeah.
Okay.
At the very least, I'd like to see that they're required to be a part of that shared agreement.
And then the gravel pit, there's an intercept.
Right.
And the main one, it's an intercept.
Yeah, if you read it, it does say that.
Pardon?
The
red light is talking about the river.
Oh, yeah, the river. Yeah. That's why we didn't want to have it.
Right.
We think it's a plus.
Oh, yeah.
They won't have to go out on 197.
I agree.
People do drive past that one. I should have agreed to that.
You should do 80 by Mustang. We had a specification that would support the weight of the vehicle and the turning radius.
Yeah. This is what we've done. We did make that one of the things that we did do is we made it 20 feet, but we didn't have it 20 feet last time we were here. So we widened it up to 20 feet. The easement through there will be 24 feet wide. And that will, we talked to the soils guy, actually came up with that. You know, that will support the fire truck. This is all part of it. The easement, that dotted line that's around the outside, that's where the easement will actually go. So it goes up through, all the way around and down through here, you know, all the way to these driveways here. And of course, it doesn't continue here because these guys actually own that lot. They own that property here.
And what we did prior is we had the access and maintenance agreement submitted and reviewed by Carla to make sure that it was adequate for all the property owners. They were duly notified and they understood what they were entering into.
Here, is that going to be continuously plowed?
That's what it says, yeah. That's what's in the agreement.
I kind of like to see something from the fire company knowing that that's getting there, because I do know we've had trouble in the past a little.
We talked to them, and I don't know, you guys, we were in front of ZBA many times.
Yeah.
And we were trying to get a common driveway. And I did talk to the fire department about the access and what we were doing there, and the fact that, you know, it would be a common driveway and it would be flat. I mean, under the requirements of that common driveway, I don't know if you read that, but it does indicate that it has to be plowed and it has to be maintained. And that the different property owners would, get together, meet if there was something required to be done, and that they would split, they would hire somebody to plow the snow, or they would all do it themselves, or one guy would do it, and they would work out an agreement to have that done.
That's where the problem is. So what I'd like to see is a letter from the company saying that they're okay with this.
Okay.
From our fire department.
It's
we need something in writing because we, you know.
As I was there last time, again, you guys, I didn't come to you guys, I came to ZBA.
Yeah.
And I met with the chief, and he's like, he's a great guy. He's like, he goes, I took the plan back. I had a bunch of people in the fire department review it with me. We went over it together. It meets the building code requirement. And we don't have a problem. And I said, boy, it'd be great to have a letter to. And he goes, probably won't do that. If somebody calls me, I'll tell them. But
I think you need to call them and tell them that we'd like a letter. Yeah. I think that's something we could have in our file, don't you?
Yes.
The removal of Area A.
Area A is just, supposedly it's being worked on now by the attorney. This Area A is all this property right here. That was an agreement that was to be made with this owner of this property right here. So this owner right here, he has a shed on that property, and he has another shed up here on that property. So the deal was he would take that parcel right there. So it comes down, follows down here, comes back up. And apparently there's been conversation with him already. It's in the works. The attorney's working on getting that done. And that would just be a boundary line agreement that his boundary would now, instead of being over here, it would just move to here, coming straight down. So that's what, so right now there's nothing finalized there, formalized there, but that's the idea. And if for some reason it all, you know, turns to crap, then that'll be part of this lot too.
So these lot two is a really neat shaped lot, but they don't end up with the stormwater for the next door neighbor development. I was going to ask the board how they felt about this. We did a shared driveway for McKenna, I think it was, over on 32. I went by the other day and they paved it very nice. Okay, they put a street sign on it.
I see that.
And then underneath it, they put a sign that said private drive,
yep.
No trespassers.
Yep.
All right. I would, myself personally, and if nobody else cares, that's okay. It's not that super important, but I'd like to see something on the plan that says that there shall be no signage naming this road or naming this driveway. This is a driveway. Okay, it's not a road.
I was thinking you were going to say just the opposite way you said that.
Well,
you would want to have a sign.
Have a sign on it? No.
I think you have to have
a
name for fire purposes.
Yeah, for 911.
Why, it's a street address.
It's a private road. It would be given a name and address for.
The ones I've seen in other towns, they just call Fire Road A or Fire Road B or whatever, like that.
But imagine if this was one residence there. They would have a driveway and a street number, which they do. And I understand the people at the tenants were upset because their street number was, you know, whatever, Route 32 number,
right.
Such and such A,
right.
Or B, or
right.
C, and D, and it upset them because it made it look like they lived in an apartment. Okay, well, okay, I can see that. Sorry, all right. But this is going to have a street address. Actually, each of these lots should have allowance for a street address because each one of them has frontage on 197.
Right, and actually that addressing has to be done before final. So.
Right, so in general, they'll add an address to the fire department to find them. Okay. I mean, yes, the street sign would give them a landmark. I understand that, but it just seems like in some of these cases we're doing everything we can to make it a private road, which we don't allow in the town. Not a private road, it's a driveway.
Right.
Okay. I'm not going to say they can't pave it. It's just with the one in Canada, it cracked me up because it seemed kind of stupid. If you don't want people to think it's a street, then don't put a street sign on it.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Well, private drive or whatever, but if it's something lane or whatever. I've seen people with their own residential driveway do that. They put their name out there. It's, you know, like
right.
In my place, I show
yeah.
My driveway school, it says Arnold Lane. Okay, but it's not, and I would expect people to think it's a lane then, that they can drive on. So, but that's me. That's just one vote. I'm not willing to go to the wall on it. I just thought I'd mention that.
Well, what would I do? Put a note in here that we can do that? Is that... I don't think they care. They're not.
Yeah, I think my opinion is leave it up to them. I personally like the road speed.
Yeah, you
so.
Can't put it out and no one's going to pay attention to your job.
True. Just now, when they did that on Kennis, did they get the address changed? They did.
No. That they can put any sign out there they want. They have an assigned address and that's that.
And the post office does that, correct?
No, the assessor does that.
Do you do that? Do you get involved in that?
She comes to me from time to time for some advice, but it's her responsibility.
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm not
there's a lot of thought that has to go into that, a lot of pre-planning because
Oh yeah.
It's trickier than it looks.
Would you like me to ask the fire department when I talk to them about having a road A or road some site like that. I mean, maybe they wanted something there.
It's going to come up. I mean,
they're bound by the 911 system, and the 911 system is based on the assigned address. Regardless of what people may name their driveway, they don't go by. The best thing you could do, Gary, in my opinion, would be go to the assessor now and get some preliminary idea of what the number is going to be.
Okay. Anything else?
I think it's your option to go to the general gist of this. Whether you go forward or not, it's up to you and your.
Well, we would like to go forward, and we would like to schedule a public hearing for the next meeting. If you've done it.
Lord, you have enough information to go to the public hearing?
I personally would like to get all of these for the time before we find out whether that we're not getting ourselves in some sort of legal problem. Basically, but I feel like.
I mean, what could she say that would. I mean, nothing's going to change the fact that this drainage comes down through the 197. Yeah. I mean, we'll do whatever she wants us to do before you get a final approval. But like for the public, to have a public hearing, you know, would that,
sure. You know? Yeah, I agree.
I mean, we'd like to get to that public hearing and try to, you know, start finalizing things if we can. So, I mean.
We've got that fire department stuff and then the addresses. I think I kind of like to wait myself. I think the drainage is an issue with me, but I don't know if I'm right or wrong.
I mean, will she give you the addresses before that there's some indication that the town might approve the lots?
She will not assign them, but she will give you an idea what the numbers will be.
Okay.
They won't be assigned yet because we don't have it.
Usually we end up putting those on the final plan.
Correct.
Put them on.
But you can start getting an idea of what the reservation of numbers will be.
And we would do that. We would do that, but I'm not sure that makes a difference to the public for a public hearing what those addresses would be. And I don't think the fire department, the last time, they had no problem with the plan that we put together for them. And like I say, and you guys didn't see it, but the letter that I wrote to the ZBA after I talked to them said exactly that. They looked. You know, we talked to Jesse. We got something. You know, Jesse told us that everything's fine. We talked to Paul. Paul said everything's fine. We talked to the fire chief. Said everything's fine. Could we get letters from any of those guys? We could. You know, we asked for them. And it's like, you know, we have crap to do. You know, they don't want to do it. And could I get something by the next meeting? I think. If they're going to give me something, we could. I mean, we're not going to sit around. We're going to go try to get this done. So, I mean, I don't know what the public would. That would make a difference to the public. And we're not going forward until you guys give us the approval to go forward. So,
I'm going to say that I think we have enough information that we can schedule a public hearing. I will say this: that without input from Carla on access to that stormwater and some kind of action on that, that I wouldn't see myself going any further forward in that public hearing without that.
Okay.
But I don't see any reason at this point why we can't schedule the public hearing and hope that that information is here in time for it.
Is there any motion for that?
I'll make a motion that we schedule a public hearing for, I was trying to find out, General Contracting LLC. For the September meeting, which is going to be the 20th, September 20th at 7, we don't have one already back, do we? Public hearing? I don't think so, that I know of.
No, we don't have any others. 701's
up. 701.
Look at that. You're first up. Make sure you're timely, because we like move right on if you're not here.
I was sitting out in the parking lot. I missed you for it.
Telling you right now.
Who's here before me?
You know, once, twice, the gavel hits, and we move on. So.
What do you do to hold a third of my contract in for the third of the September? Can you vote for a second?
I'll second.
What is the name of the second and further discussion? And how the picture that you brought it up, I don't think it's too controversial, or has it been high?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstention? Motion carries. Chairman, I'm going to step on this question. Question for
you. Do we still have the signage requirement for the public hearing?
Yes, you do.
Who is it, Jim, that would look at it and say that's okay?
I've got a template language if you want.
Okay.
Matter of fact, we have the ability now again to print out the signs for you, and then you mount them on a.
Fantastic.
You just gotta do something to put a plastic bag over them or something. They only have to last for 10 days, so.
I think some of us will drive by and see whether it's there or not, and if it's not, we have no problem. Once again, moving on. Sometimes
you're
moving. I am. I'm just more efficient than I used to
be. Sure, thank you.
Thanks a lot, ladies and gentlemen. I appreciate it.
We will try to do it again. The next one I have for the season is Jerome. He's from the group night. 1588 Drive.
Canvas?
Cannabis.
Cannabis, okay. Got it.
The property itself, located on Route 9, highlighted in yellow on this map. Lower left-hand corner of the map is the exit 17 interchange. We're located approximately 3 miles north of the interchange. Our adjoining landmark to the north is Hillflex Nursery. The site is located entirely within the C1 zone. Light manufacturing uses are permitted on the property under a special use permit. Existing conditions of the property. The site itself is mainly wooded. We're in successional growth, mostly some pine trees with
hardwood starting to come into the property. On-site soils are generally sandy, well-drained, no presence of groundwater or relatively deep groundwater. Topography in this area is generally flat. So the property itself is a 43-acre parcel with approximately 800 feet of frontage on Route 9. Found on, so to orient everybody, this is the overall plan of the parcel. North would be to your left. Route 9 here, 43-acre parcel, 800 feet of frontage. We're bound on the east side by the Niagara Mohawk or National Grid utility lines and gas lines. Over on this side, this is a blow-up of the property. What we are looking to develop at this point in time is a 30,000 square foot single-story light manufacturing facility. Access will be to Route 9 through a driveway. Coming into the site, we have 40 parking spaces in front of the building or to the south side of the building. Moving around on the east side, we do have a loading dock that will be able to accommodate both small box trucks and a tractor-trailer loading dock if needed. Stormwater would be managed on the property. Water and sewer would be provided to the site. There's an existing water main on Route 9. And as we're all aware, there is a sewer line that is being extended to Route 9 and is going to be extended down in front of this property. The area of the site we're looking to develop this time is about 5 to 6 acres, which includes the access road and the building itself. The remaining portion of the property, we anticipate further build out in the future. We really don't know what that is at this point in time. We do, however, have this anticipated use. They're ready to commit to the property. We're coming to the planning board to present the project tonight, get some feedback, and then move forward with this single user on the property. And if there are more applications in the future, other things, we'll take them and develop plans for an overall plan on the property. If there's any questions about what we're proposing, we'll certainly be here tonight to address them at the concept stage and see what we can do.
Special permit has to go.
Yeah, just to clarify, special use permit is issued by the Zoning Board of Appeals.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can do the reviews in a concurrent fashion somewhat if you want, but we need, typically it's been special use permit approval first, and then site plan review follows that. Like I said, you can do it concurrently to shorten the time frame, but we do need that kind of ordering in the approval process.
Certainly we're aware we've got to go to the ZBA to
get
a special use permit. We did want to get the planning board's feedback at the concept level. We realized we got a process here that's going to take several months, but we did want to start the process here.
That's a good step, because typically, oftentimes the zoning board will ask for the planning board's input, you know, on an endeavor like this before they decide.
Your site location map in the corner is off.
Yes, it is.
That was one of my comments. Thinking of what we're doing down at Bentonville's and where this is, that maybe you look at a boulevard entrance or something, or plan on sharing that access road, because you're going to have multiple stuff, even though you have 8 feet. I know this is the only plan for the property, but just maybe think about a boulevard or something just to limit the turn down and off.
Or in future development, have a driveway.
Yeah,
at the other end of the frontage and combine them.
Yeah, correct. That would be the anticipated plan. We don't know. We may end up with a shopping center here, commercial pad sites out front, and a loop road connecting them to driveways. We just don't know. We know we have one user that is ready to come in and move forward, and that's what we're starting with, and others will come on board.
Yeah, just so something is better than what we see on the ground right now.
Yeah. What we don't want to have, DOT would not permit it, is six different curb cuts for six different lots.
A 100-foot wide.
Yeah.
course, there's a bunch of those. They love those.
And just knowing the location, when you do your species, you're probably going to hit the butterfly again, so take advantage of the time frame. It's wooded now, but if it wasn't wooded, it would probably have movement on it. So just get that done now so you're not in January trying to do a field visit.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, the majority of the site is wooded.
Yeah.
So we will take a look at the habitat areas.
Is the user going to be a tenant? Or is the user going to be acquiring a lot?
At this point, they are going to lease this area of land. They're not purchasing it. We may look at a subdivision in the future. Again, we don't know that level of detail right now. I know we want to have potentially multiple uses out there. But this will be a leased parcel at this point.
What are you
going to
do with the building now?
The building will be used for the growing of cannabis. And the manufacturing, the processing of that on the facility for distribution to dispensaries.
What is cannabis?
Marijuana.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, this is more than a manufacturing facility.
So are we going to give off smells and those kinds of things? Yeah.
So there is owners involved with it. This is EMP Strone and Gianni. We've talked about it. They have a tenant in mind who operates facilities in Massachusetts currently. They put in, I don't want to commit to these terms, but I know there's some filtration and some reverse osmosis types of filtration to significantly reduce and bring that smell down to almost nothing.
Well, I can tell you there's residential areas over there, and I have to live over that way. And my answer is no right off the bat, because I don't even want to hear. I don't even want to smell that stuff right now, much less even see it or have it around here. I don't think it's the right thing to do. It belongs somewhere away. I mean, we got schools, we got residential areas.
What portion of this 30,000 square feet is designated for a grow house?
I don't have the exact breakdown. Is it roughly half?
Yeah, it's about 50%. From the plans that the tenant, we'll call them right now, has shown me of their Massachusetts facility, okay, It's about 50%. The other 50% is processing. Yep. Processing and packaging. Yep. Oh, Anthony's wrong.
Warren, another question.
So yeah, first of all, I was going to ignore it, but you got a typo on your manufacturing too. It's manufacturing. So I was going to leave it, but it keeps staring. So anyways, I'm not really sure. I know what the growing of marijuana falls under manufacturing. I'm not saying I don't think it does. I said I'm not really sure if it does. Okay. So is there some clarification, like statewide or something, that says that it is? Or
I think if we look at the definition of manufacturing, it is the creation of a product on the facility that is ultimately taken and packaged up for distribution. Very similar to most manufacturing uses. Now, what we thought was ideal about this location is immediately next door. It's not a manufacturing facility, but it is a nursery that is growing crops of different nature. So we thought this was the appropriate area, and that would fall into the definition of a light manufacturing facility on the property.
Well, this is a marijuana manufacturing, in this case, it may be a little more manufacturing than the greenhouse next door. Because this isn't going to be done in the greenhouse.
Correct. It's going to be enclosed.
It's inside an enclosed building with lights and...
Yeah. So. And that's where the air filtration and all that occurs.
That's an extreme priority.
Oh, yeah.
My understanding is that's a absolute... Okay, and I would say, as a board member here on the planning board, I would absolutely demand some kind of proof that you are filtering that smell. My understanding is that, and I'm not worried about the product itself. My understanding, understanding is the actual growing of marijuana inside an enclosed facility like this produces extremely nauseous odors.
Yeah, so it's a big concern and right. requirement in the manufacturing of cannabis in Massachusetts as well. And so, I mean, getting further along into this whole process, you'll see that there's a required filtration, so air filtration. It's like a super HEPA, and I think you're right about the reverse osmosis portion of it, to have like zero.
Plus, I'm just letting you know that to be prepared for help offer that.
It was one of the first things he told me about it.
Because I'm not okay with the earlier comment that it reduces the smell, so it's not quite so bad enough. It's like, and not a farm, so
yeah,
I get it. You know, it's hard to control them, and I really hate to have somebody tell me that my facility had to meet the requirements I'm asking of this, but my understanding is this is a pretty nasty smell, and this is in our commercial zone, not out in the ag zone. So,
Jim, do you still do work in town of Chester?
Is that what
you did?
Yeah.
Did you do etain?
Pardon?
Etain?
No.
A facility like this
No, I did not do that.
Right north of Warrensburg that came under the medical provisions. So I just, I didn't know if Jim was involved with that.
No, I wasn't.
Are you guys familiar with the one in Chester Town?
Etain.
I think if you're producing for medical purposes, it's a
same product.
Same product. Yeah. So the licensing was
different. The licensing was different.
You're making medicinal marijuana?
Well, it's a different license. It's the same product that they're growing inside their facility.
I think the way it's delivered is different. What you give a patient is not the same thing you give a recreation user.
I don't know, it's the same product being grown within their facility.
And the smell that it gives off, I gotta tell you, I got zero tolerance for this. It's residential, we got schools, we're commercial area. People do not want to come into town and smell this. They don't want to smell it.
Totally understood.
Is there also going to be a retail component here?
We have the name. We built the neighborhood that is in Bathurst. This was one of our concerns as well. Our office is directly across the street.
I understand.
Again, another, it's definitely a an issue that was brought up. One of our first questions and one of his first facts with his whole process of his build out was containing any smells that were to be let out of the building through their filtration.
Is there any retail?
No, I'm not part of the business of it all. This is our application for usage here, but I'm pretty sure that if we're following closely with Massachusetts regulations, they do not allow dispensaries to be affiliated with manufacturing. So no, this is not a dispensing. This is not a dispensary. This is
the way the law is right now. And towns have to decide what they want to allow. You can have the dispensaries, which is somebody the consumer comes in and buys. You can have a dispensary where the consumer can come in and use. So buy an edible, eat the edible on site, and leave. There's the manufacturing of it, which you manufacture it and then, much like a beer manufacturer, then it distributes out.
Right.
So that's what was approved a year or two ago.
So this just begs the question. If there's no retail aspect to this at all, why is this facility even being proposed for a commercial zone under a special use permit? Why not use one of the many empty lots we have in our manufacturing park? Our industrial park's full of them. In fact, we've got other ones too. We've got one up on Route 9 south of the Northway that also has lots.
So because we have this property.
Right.
Pardon? Because we have the property.
Well, no, no, I mean, I understand it from your viewpoint, but I'm saying from ours, mm-hmm. and from the zoning board, it's not like this is a special manufacturing and retail commercial endeavor. It's strictly manufacturing. Okay? There are some potential issues, all right, that would lend itself to an industrial park. Why not a lot in the industrial park? Boom.
So I think the answer to that is that if we believe it meets the zoning and is a light manufacturing use. You can certainly get clarification from Jim. Or
I think we've been down this path before with these things. I think we got to, you know, use the established system that we have in place for determining land uses and their appropriate classification in our code. That rests with the zoning administrator. It's a ministerial action. This is the first I've heard of this tonight. This is the first I've heard the word cannabis associated with this property. So I have to make a determination.
Okay.
And if somebody is aggrieved by that, including one of you people, if you want to appeal that to the zoning board for an interpretation, whether I'm correct or not, I welcome you to do so. But that's where it starts.
And then... If anybody does, it's not against Jim, it's
right.
against the determination.
Correct. I don't take it personally in the least. Matter of fact, I prefer people to go for interpretation because I've always felt that it's better to be rested with a zoning board among a group of people rather than one person. You know, I have to do it. It's my responsibility. But certainly I welcome the appeal for interpretation. I have to look into this. There's a lot of new ground on this to plow, and there's a lot of, you know, it's a relatively new phenomenon from a land use perspective. And I got to see what some other communities have done with this and how it's been classified. Has there been any challenges? Has there been any interpretations? I don't know. So this is the first I've heard of it, but I will make an official determination, and then we'll go from there. And if either the applicants agree by what I determine, or somebody in the public or in the town, they're certainly welcome to appeal that for interpretation.
So with all that being said, I would like to commend you guys for attempting to develop this site. Okay.
It's a beautiful site.
I just got to say that And it was nice of you, or good of you, when you're looking at a possible light manufacturing site off the road, out behind. I get that. It just seems to me that if this is manufacturing, and if it's this particular manufacturing, then it might lend itself very much to our industrial park. Which unfortunately, you don't, and we understand that. I still commend you for looking at developing this site.
Yeah, no, we respect that. I think the major, plus for what we saw being developed here was the fact that this is a high water, high sewer usage facility that we just thought would have lent itself.
We already have water and sewer. It's also high electricity using use, and we already have that also in the industrial park.
Understood.
Okay, so it would just seem that the minute you said grow house, I thought, wow, there should be in the industrial park next to all the power, all the electricity available there. Okay.
How large are the lots in the industrial park?
I don't know.
They range in size, but this could be accommodated.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like, we have one applicant who's actually combining lots.
They're not as considered kind of on the small side, I guess.
I would imagine it would be.
Of these facilities. So I think the intent to grow is part of this, you know, idea.
If 50% is for growing, that means what, 15,000 square feet roughly
right.
is for growing. That's not a big area.
Right.
In this whole process, do you need other approvals? They're all from DEC and DOH, the laundry list of alphabet?
Yeah, honestly, I'm not even sure. Again, I'm not as knowledgeable on the business side of this, so I don't know what's going to be required. It's more about whether or not land usage is appropriate.
I believe there will be a permit issued by the state, but I believe everything else is going to rest within the municipality.
Right. See, I don't know. I know, like was mentioned earlier, there's been other manufacturers of this product for medicinal purposes, so there's got to be a, I don't know if there's been air emissions permits or anything like that.
Yeah, there's something like that, yes.
I'm not sure, but I will find out. Like I said, the first I've heard of it is tonight.
Jim, that one in the town of Chester is probably...
Yeah, there's an example.
Yeah, there's also a very high security requirement with all these facilities.
Yep.
Yeah.
I have the same concerns that I have about facilities like being in this particular district, particularly when we do have alternate locations and this part of the private development. I think the standards for special use permits are supposed to be meet. It's not supposed to be what happens in the property.
Joe, is the whole piece of property in the C1 district? Or is
yes.
It? Okay.
That's a nice question.
No, I think we've heard the board. I understand their concerns. We need to talk with the zoning administrator and the zoning board appeals on the special use permit prior to proceeding through any of the site interview and approval process.
How board have been in this at all? Like they do with solar, being that this is something new to?
Not to my knowledge. I mean, you know, I'm not sure how the... you know, the cannabis law is coming, how it's being implemented, and what kind of interface there is yet. Those are all things I got to look at. But I will find out and let you know.
And does this relate to what we speak about at the last meeting with Carla, and look into the, like, the retail sales of it and all that, or the tax base and all that? And
Correct.
We see taxes go down and those kind of things.
Yep.
That's all related to this, correct?
Yes, to some degree. The manufacturing element of this is somewhat unique, but yeah, it is interwoven, let's put it that way, in my opinion.
Okay, yeah.
This one may actually, because you know, you asked about lot sizes or whatever, it might lend itself to the industrial park down south of the Northway. What's the name of that?
Thousand Oaks? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Thousand Oaks. I'm trying to think of the name. Ass?
Rass.
Rass owns Thousand Oaks out there. Mm-hmm. Past Rainbow. And that's in my neighborhood, just so you know. But I'm just saying, those are smaller lots.
They have access to sewer and water, don't they?
They do not. So if you need access to sewer and water, the industrial parks, you're done.
Yeah, sewer and water is an absolute necessity.
Okay.
I thought this was a great use, being that there is a new sewer line. You would be a significant contribution for fees associated with that district that's being established.
Again, that's one issue, okay? And there's one that I go around. The other issue is what are we having? Residential schools, things like that in that area. So that's more important.
Understood. Anything else?
Thank you. Any questions? I think we got to get the special use permit.
Oh, yeah, so no, that's clear. The planning board can't act on site plan without a special use permit. That's clear, but I got to see how this use gets classified. No, I don't think so. We're on track for I think another like regular meeting for September. I don't know of any need for special meetings or anything like that just yet.
It'd be weird anyway with Labor Day.
Yeah, it's a Tuesday. It's a Tuesday submission date.
No, so we have to do in September. I don't think you could.
Well, it has to be after your September meeting. It has to be now.
make sure you don't need a motion. You're the boss, dude.
Well, motion.
I'll make a motion to be adjourned.
Second.
Motion's made in second. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Okay. By the end of the meeting, I was starting to get used to terminology and stuff, but I'm definitely. I have to turn this off.
Yeah.